The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're broadcasting to you live this time from our headquarters studio in Edmond, Oklahoma. Spent a little bit of time yesterday afternoon down in the city. Took my son to the bookstore, and then we went to Walmart. Quite a lot of traffic, actually. Quite a lot of activity here in Edmond. Most of the stores still have some kind of social distancing that they're encouraging. But going into the bookstore, it was pretty much on you to put on the hand sanitizer and all those things. So it's nice. Nice. Not that I get out that often for those kinds of excursions anyway, but it's just nice to see some activity. And even though it was pretty dead in the Heathrow Terminal, Terminal 5 on Friday, once we met or made it to our connecting flight in Chicago, there again, a fair bit more activity here in the states. I think Prime Minister Johnson had his statement yesterday where he at least announced some kind of a roadmap to ease out of this, but not too many changes as yet. And I know that makes a few of our employees at the Edstone office a little frustrated, but hopefully the UK will begin to pull out of this and we can resume more activity. But there's always activity going on in God's work, even in the midst of a lockdown, as you well know if you've been listening to this program. Richard filled in for me on Friday, as many of you know. This came from one of our listeners in Illinois. He said, I wanted to respond to Richard Palmer's program on the Trumpet Daily radio show, VE Day. That was Friday's subject. He says, I was totally locked on and somber, it says. I never thought about it, but yes, we did not know if the Allied forces would win. It says, and the people in the bombed out churches praying to Almighty God. It says, your description on the program seemed to bring me right there as if I were living through it. Thank you, Richard. I'll never forget that particular program. So some good feedback there in response to Richard's show on Friday. Another one here says, this is from New York. Just had to write an email that will hopefully make you smile. I personally have been listening to every TDR program because I find them therapeutic, funny, informative, and inspiring. It says, but I wanted to write to you to let you know the impact that the show has had on my children. I turn the YouTube program on while I make my son's breakfast. My son, my oldest son, is about to turn 6. But he listens in, and I notice that when he goes to play, he's using words like Constitution, coronavirus, deep state, and somehow brings President Trump and President Obama into his imaginations as well. It says here, but it's my one-year-old son that is the funniest. He loves to watch you and wave at the screen to you. He also calls you not Dada for his limited vocabulary. That's a pretty big deal. He cries when he can't see you. For example, when Mr. Palmer hosted on Friday, he threw a fit, and I had to explain that Mr. Palmer does a good job. And so he came around to liking Mr. Palmer as well. But not Dada is still the best in his feisty mind. So Richard had a very memorable program on Friday, but he also made a one-year-old cry. So it's important that we keep things in proper perspective. Well, President Trump tweeted out over the weekend, Obamagate. Quite a lot has happened since I last spoke to you on Thursday. I believe Thursday was the day that the DOJ dropped all the charges against Michael Flynn. And then there's quite a few more revelations that are coming out as a result of these transcripts that Adam Schiff was pretty much forced to release, finally, after 3 years in some cases. And so more details are coming out, and people are talking about it on social media. Sam was saying this morning that I guess it's trending on Twitter, Obamagate. There's been something like as of a few hours ago, 2.2 million tweets on this particular subject. Just to give you again a little bit of a summary, Schiff, as I said, he's forced to release these transcripts, and they reveal that, you know, whether it's the media outlets, CNN, MSNBC, John Brennan, all of the deep state officials that were helping to target President Trump and to cover up Barack Obama, Jim Comey, John Brennan, James Clapper. These are individuals that were right there. They saw all of the evidence. The evidence, remember, they talked about for months and even years. It was all there, and they went to CNN, and they went to MSNBC, and they said, Schiff himself, he was right up close to all of the evidence, and said, we have it. We have it. There is Russian collusion here. The president, his administration, they are guilty. Well, as we now know from the Mueller investigation, they never found any evidence. And the significance of these transcripts that are being released is that they knew it straight away. They knew it from day one. They knew it as President Trump was coming into office in January of 2017. And yet they continued with this hoax. They continued with this coup attempt. They continued to target President Trump, Mike Flynn, and others. Well, that case, as I say, finally it was dropped on Thursday. And you would think that it's impossible, I know, but you would think if there's one news event where you could begin to bring everyone together, it would be against an American that was unjustly accused, targeted. A perjury trap was set for him. But yet when you look at the radical left, the way that they reacted on Thursday and on Friday of last week, a complete and total meltdown that the DOJ had dropped this case. This is put together by Grabian. This is the montage they have for the media's reaction to that case against Mike Flynn being dropped. Clip one.
It's a pretty dark place on social media. The very first comment after the story broke that I saw on Twitter was, Putin, if you're listening, high five your asset. And there are Russian flags and Russian memes popping up.
And now we see Bill Barr really just doing Donald Trump's dirty work.
Now he has in his back pocket a little AG who saw to it to let Flynn go.
It is, I think, breathtaking dishonesty from the Justice Department.
This is the collapse of the Justice Department.
Now, Katyal, you caught my breath with the collapse of the Justice Department.
This is a case where the fix was in.
The fix is in.
Not good for the rule of law. It's not good for morale. And it's not a fair outcome.
This is an absolute injustice.
I don't worry anyone who cares about the rule of law.
Mike Flynn's lawyers have been engaged in a smear campaign.
This is a political and incredibly destructive thing to the rule of law.
It's all heading towards the president wiping the Mueller investigation out of the history books, at least as far as criminal convictions.
Wiping the Mueller investigation out of the history books. What exactly do we need that investigation in the history books for? It's there. I mean, everybody knows it. What did it turn up? What is he trying to erase? This is a case of the Attorney General, Bill Barr, trying to correct a grave injustice. And you would never know it. The injustice, the way they see it, as you just heard there, the injustice is that he's not going to jail. That he should be going to jail, even though Comey brags about the way that he set him up, he ambushed him. And then the FBI agents that interviewed him later said, I don't think he did lie. A total setup from the beginning, a total trap. And they took advantage of that transition period. Donald Trump came in on January 20th, 2017, and then the so-called interview, which really was an interrogation. We're going to go through the timeline here in just a second. But this happened on January 24th. They're just 4 days into it. Trying to catch him in a lie. Trying to catch an inconsistency. Here's what the Attorney General had to say on this point of, are you just doing the president's bidding? He laid out some facts of what actually happened with that FBI interrogation in January of 2017. This is William Barr on, I think, Thursday or Friday of last week, clip two.
I think a very important evidence here was that this was not a bona fide counterintelligence investigation, was that they were closing the investigation in December. So there's no mystery about the call, but they initially tried some theories of how they could open another investigation, which didn't fly, and then they found out that they had not technically closed the earlier investigation, and they kept it open for the express purpose of trying to catch, lay a perjury trap for General Flynn. They didn't warn him the way we usually would be required by the department. They bypassed the Justice Department. They bypassed the protocols at the White House and so forth. These were things that persuaded me that there was not a legitimate counterintelligence investigation going on.
The whole investigation from the beginning, totally illegitimate. They didn't tell him going in. They didn't warn him going in. He thought it was just going to be a friendly chat, a friendly exchange. But they were, as the Attorney General said, that they were trying to lay a perjury trap. The Wall Street Journal had this to say. Even discounting for Mr. Obama's partisan audience, this gets the case willfully wrong. The audience, that is, that's saying he committed perjury, and now the Attorney General comes in and gets him off the hook, doing the president's bidding and such. But it says here, Mr. Flynn was never charged with perjury, which is lying under oath in a legal proceeding. Mr. Flynn pleaded guilty to a single count of lying to an FBI or lying to the FBI in a meeting at the White House on January 24th, 2017, that he was led to believe was a friendly chat among colleagues. And as we go through the timeline here in just a second, they worked with the media. I think it was the Washington Post on January 23rd. They came out with a story. This is the day before the ambush. They came out with a story saying, regarding the phone call between Flynn and Kislyak, we're not investigating Flynn. There's no wrongdoing here for Flynn. And so he's reading this in the papers the day before, thinking that, you know, well, they're not looking at me. They're not looking at President Trump. And then here come the two FBI agents the next day trying to catch him in a trap, setting a perjury trap. This is Molly Hemingway from Friday, I believe, maybe Saturday. It says, information released in the Justice Department's motion to dismiss the case it brought against Mike Flynn confirms the significance of a January 5th, 2017 meeting. You remember the we've gone through this timeline before, the meeting that Obama had with all of his intelligence officials. This was when they hurriedly put through this investigation to try to show there was Russian meddling. And, of course, they needed this to lay the groundwork for this charge, this hoax that President Trump and his people were somehow part of it, working in collusion with the Russians. So here is Obama on January the 5th meeting with all his intel officials. And then the ones that are going to be they're going to be held over. That would be Comey and Sally Yates. He met with them specifically after the meeting in order to basically plan how they're going to keep this investigation going. And getting Flynn out of the way, by the way, was a significant part of that plan. It says it was at this meeting that Obama gave guidance to key officials who would be tasked with protecting his administration's utilization of secretly funded Clinton campaign research, which alleged Trump was involved in a treasonous plot to collude with Russia, from being discovered or stopped by the incoming administration. So they were relying on the Steele dossier, this political hit job, all of these lies, the dirty dossier, as it's called. And then they're left to wonder, okay, how can we keep these investigations going even after Trump's people are in place? Even after people like Mike Flynn are in place? It says, a clearer picture is emerging of the drastic steps that were taken to accomplish Obama's goal in the following weeks and months. It says shortly thereafter, high-level operatives began intensely leaking selective information supporting a supposed Russia-Trump conspiracy theory. The incoming National Security Advisor was ambushed, that would be Flynn, and the incoming Attorney General was forced to recuse himself from oversight of investigations of President Trump. It says, at each major point in the operation, explosive media leaks were a key strategy in the operation to take down Trump. So it was all carefully coordinated collusion between the deep state, between the radical left and their allies in the media, every step along the way, just like the Washington Post story the day before the ambush. Every step along the way, the media was complicit. The media was helping with the plot. That's why they don't want to talk about it now. I'll get to that in a second. They were all working together. And really, the Antiochus administration could not have gotten away with this were it not for the complicit media, were it not for the corrupt media. They're still trying to cover for him. Where is he? Where is he? He's finally being called out with some conservative sources. But even still, they leaked some audio from President Obama over the weekend where he says this is very, very dangerous what the Trump administration is doing, what Bill Barr is doing. You just can't let someone off for perjury. Listen to what President Obama said. And his friend, by the way, Michael Isikoff, he's the one that leaked this one. They still leak. Not that this one's illegal. The ones going on in January of 2017, lots of illegal leaking going back to that date. But here are the same people, the same names, the same media outlets. They've got to get President Obama's side of the story out there. And this is what Barack Obama had to say over the weekend, clip 8.
The degree to which the news over the last 24 hours, I think, has been somewhat downplayed about the Justice Department dropping charges against Michael Flynn. And the fact that there is no precedent that anybody can find for someone who's been charged with perjury just getting off scot-free. That's the kind of stuff where you begin to get worried that basic, not just institutional norms, but our basic understanding of rule of law is at risk. You know, when you start moving in those directions, it can accelerate pretty quickly. As we've seen in other places.
Over the weekend, talking about letting someone off for perjury, which wasn't even the charge, as I just mentioned. That's the sound, though, of a former president that's getting a little bit nervous. He should be a lot more nervous, given what he's done. But he's not being held to account. There's the truth of it is, even many Republicans, the Republicans, keep in mind, they were in charge back in 2017. They could have prevented so much of this. But as it is, they just, well, like with Jeff Sessions, he just stepped aside and said, well, carry on, Comey, and then later Mueller, just carry on with your investigation. Carry on with your ambush of Mike Flynn. There's a few exceptions. My father brings that out in the Saving America article, that Donald Trump's been willing to take a stand where others have not. And he's inspired a few, but not nearly enough. Now the truth is coming out. And it's easy to say, boy, I can't imagine a political party trying to entrap and frame his successor. That's what happened. And then all of these Republicans that just said, well, I guess we can just let it happen. How many of them, in their heart of hearts, agreed with it and thought that the president, President Trump, that is, should be removed? Molly Hemingway says, a clearer picture is emerging of the drastic steps that were taken to accomplish Obama's goal in the following weeks and months. She says, shortly after, well, I think I might have read part of that. Further on, it says, not only was information on Russia not fully shared with the incoming Trump team, as Obama directs, it says the leaks and the ambushes made the transition chaotic, scared quality individuals away from working in the administration, made effective governance almost impossible, and materially damaged national security. This is all brought on by the Obama people. It says when Comey was finally fired on May 9th, in part of his duplicitousness regarding his handling of the Russian collusion theory, he orchestrated the launch of a special counsel probe that continued his efforts for another 2 years. Even that, carefully coordinated. Comey knew he was on the way out, so he has all of his secret memos, right? And then he has a friend take it to the New York Times. Here again, how crucial the leak was to continue with this hoax, a hoax that went on for years. It says the probe ended with Mueller finding no evidence of any American colluding with Russia to steal the 2016 election, much less Trump or anyone connected to him. And then she says, an analysis of the timeline from early 2017 shows a clear pattern of behavior from the federal officials running the collusion operation against the Trump campaign. It also shows how essential media leaks were to their strategy to sideline key law enforcement and intelligence officials and to cripple the ability of the incoming Trump administration to run the country. So the strategy, who could blow it up? Well, Mike Flynn could, for sure. So he had to be taken out, and he was. They needed him fired, and then later they went after him for this lying charge because they didn't have anything on Russia. And at least, well, he made a phone call to a Russian in December of 2016. So let's try to gather him in with this wide net that they were casting out there just to catch anything, anyone. Sessions had a conversation with a Russian, so he should be recused. He was coming in, remember, as the attorney general. The attorney general. So if Mike Flynn's heading up national security and then Jeff Sessions is heading up he's the attorney general, he's heading up the DOJ. These are individuals that could have stopped it. And so they were taken out. And then who was left? Well, Jim Comey. Perfect. He's part of the plot. He stayed in there as long as he could until he could hand it over to Rosenstein and Mueller. Comey's gone. He went off to write his books. And then Mueller continued it for 2 more years. Well, you go back to that January 5th meeting. Obama's in there with Comey and Brennan and Clapper and also Sally Yates. And it says here, after the Obama briefing, the intelligence chiefs who would be leaving at the end of the term were dismissed, and Yates and Comey, who would continue in the Trump administration, were asked to stay. Not only did Obama give his guidance about how to perpetuate the Russian collusion theory investigations, he also talked about Flynn's conversations with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, according to both Comey and Yates. Interestingly, Clapper, Comey, and Yates all said that they did not brief Obama about these phone calls. Clapper testified he did not brief Obama on the calls. Yates learned about the calls from Obama himself during the meeting. This was discovered over the weekend, too, with all these transcripts being released. Yates went in there and was shot. She didn't know anything about the phone call between Flynn and Kislyak, or that they were going to try to get him on the Logan Act. So she's sitting there hearing this all for the first time from who? Barack Obama. It says here, Susan Rice, who publicly lied but later admitted under oath to her widespread use of unmasked intelligence at the end of the Obama administration, likely briefed Obama on the calls and would have had access to the intelligence. Hemingway says Comey mentions the Logan Act at this meeting. So that was January 5. And then January 6, remember, Comey went in to brief President-elect Trump. And remember when he talked about the dossier, he said that, I've got to tell you about this because the news media, they're trying to look for a hook to run with this story. And little did President Trump know that the hook they needed was Comey's meeting with him, discussing the dossier. Molly Hemingway says January 10th, that's when CNN came out with that dramatic report. Remember all the reporters? This is what they put the team of reporters on. Jim Sciutto, Jake Tapper, and the rest. Hemingway says, in an amazing coincidence, CNN found the excuse to publish the Russia claims after a high-level Obama intelligence operative leaked that Comey had briefed Trump about the dossier. The leak was Jim Clapper. This was all part of the plot. This was all part of the plan. The ones that were on the way out, they were on the way into their cushy jobs at the media. CNN, MSNBC, Clapper, Brennan, and such. January 12th, this is the timeline as it continues. The next part of the strategy was the explosive leak to David Ignatius of the Washington Post to legitimize the use against Flynn of the Logan Act, a likely unconstitutional 1799 law prohibiting private individuals, not public incoming national security advisors, from discussing foreign policy with foreign governments. It says Ignatius accepted the leak from the Obama official. There's still a lot we don't know who all the leakers were, for example, but so many of them were illegal. January 23rd, that's when the Washington Post came out with the story. The headline was FBI reviewed Flynn's calls with Russian ambassador but found nothing illicit. They reviewed the call. It had already been leaked that he had the calls. And then later you got some of the content of the calls. Illegal. An illegal leak. But here's the Washington Post the day before the ambush saying, the FBI's reviewed it. There's nothing illicit here. And then the next day they sprung the trap. James Comey says, I just sent them. They were disorganized. It was chaotic. I just sent two FBI officials. And they set the trap. Well, as part of this timeline, she goes on to explain that later it was very important for them to get Jeff Sessions out of the picture as well, because he could have stopped all this nonsense. He could have stopped this illegal coup, this coup attempt. He recuses himself, and then, like I said, who's left? The ones that were in on the plot. Andy McCarthy on Fox last night, he explained just how significant, how important it was for them to get Mike Flynn out of the picture right at the start. This is clip 3.
What the FBI and the Obama administration wanted to do here was really audacious, if you think about it in terms of the idea of trying to continue an investigation after a new president has come into power and is in a position to shut down the investigation, when the president ultimately is the target of the investigation. General Flynn was an exception. He was a savvy intelligence operator. He had been the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He knew how the FBI worked in conjunction with the intelligence community. And it is inconceivable to me, if you wanted to continue an investigation of the president during the president's administration, that they could have pulled that off with a sophisticated intelligence actor being the national security advisor and being loyal to the president. So I think in terms of him and looking specifically at Flynn's case, it's better to look at him as kind of something that was obstructing the Bureau rather than their objective in the investigation. They needed to remove him if they wanted to continue this particular investigation.
They needed to remove Flynn if they were to continue with this illegal, unconstitutional investigation. They needed to remove Sessions. He recused himself on March 2nd, 2017. And Comey's finally fired in May of 2017. But because of the leaks, the New York Times, Rosenstein's in on it too. They get Bob Mueller assigned to it, and then you have the Mueller probe. And, well, you know so much of the history here. But those critical transition months, going back to the end of 2016, the beginning of 2017, and as we've noted before, President Obama's fingerprints are all over this. And now it's finally beginning to be revealed. Jim Jordan tweeted out last night, a pattern? Obama's IRS targeted conservatives before the 2012 election. Obama's FBI targeted President Trump and his allies before the 2016 election. See, they get especially busy, the deep state, right before an election, because they want to cheat their way into office. They don't submit to the will of the American people. They will do, as my father has explained, they will do anything and everything they can to hold on to power. That's what this has been about from the beginning. He used the IRS to target conservative groups before the 2012 election. And then he used, incredibly, astoundingly, he used the FBI, the DOJ, to try to take down President Trump and his allies, even before the 2016 election, and certainly after as well, as we've been seeing here. How big of a story is this? Well, what previous president has conspired to frame and try to entrap his successor? My father wrote in the Saving America piece, for 8 years, under President Obama, the forces of the radical left were on the march, virtually unchecked. Even Republican leaders caved in. Even Republicans. They caved in. And that was after they had taken control of Congress and had a lot of power to stop the president. Says Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It's quite something to behold, him resisting these anti-American forces. It says he's inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical left and to help expose it for what it is. Listen to what the president said. I think this was in a meeting he had with Republicans on Friday of last week. Just move ahead to clip six.
And they had that 8 years, the Obama 8 years that have been absolutely terrible. If you look at the Justice Department and what's taken place, you look at the FBI and what's taken place. And frankly, prior to that, a lot of bad things went on. Tremendous dishonesty from Schiff and from others. And they know it's going on. They know these are not stupid people. They know it was a hoax. They know better than anybody in this room it was a hoax. They set it up. They're not aggrieved. I watch Schiff. Shifty Schiff. He acts so aggrieved. So aggrieved. He knows it was, he got caught. And not only caught, if he weren't in the halls of Congress, he'd be in jail because he made up phony stories and phony speeches and phony, everything was phony. He's a sick man. He's really a sick man. And he's a corrupt politician.
President last week, he's also used the word scum quite a lot, as I've noted previously. You can study into Ezekiel 24 on your own time. But there he was saying that they set all this up. They knew there was no evidence. That's what these latest revelations really are showing, if we want to just summarize. There's a lot of detail, a lot of pages to sift through, I suppose. But the basic revelation there is that there wasn't evidence from the beginning. Here's the president on Fox News, also, I believe, a few days ago, clip seven.
They tried to take down the president of the United States, a sitting duly elected president of the United States, before I even won. I'm running against the news media and the Democrats. It's a party and a candidate that's incompetent. That's what they have, a bad candidate, but they are a big power, a big, big crooked power, very dishonest power.
A big crooked power, the Democrat media complex. They're all in it together. Collusion from the very beginning. And as I say, it continues. Here we are, 3 years on, the record's finally being set straight. There's finally justice for Mike Flynn. But you see their reaction. They don't want justice. They want to destroy their political opponents. This was Brian Stelter's response to some of these revelations over the weekend about Flynn, about the lack of evidence, about the fact that anyone would even cover this story. This was the story they repeated. This was the only story they were on for years. And now the record's being set straight, and guess what? They're totally, totally disinterested. Here's Brian Stelter yesterday, clip 4.
The death toll isn't something to just be downplayed. It's not something we can hide from, even if it is gut-wrenching to hear about every day. It's like New Orleans floods every day. It's like the planes go into the towers every day. And to look away or act like it's now normal or acceptable is a disgrace to the victims. It's so disappointing to look at what we're seeing from right-wing media these days, where there's such an obsession with the deep state and these revelations about the Russia probe and the decision about Michael Flynn. They're treating the Michael Flynn story like it's a bigger deal than the deaths of 2,000 Americans a day. You know, we're seeing this on Fox and Friends and other shows. When the president called into Fox and Friends the other morning, Friday morning, right before the unemployment rate numbers came out, he talked about the Flynn case for 20 minutes before he was asked about the pandemic. In what right mind is any scandal, any political scandal, any Department of Justice story more important to ask the president about than the pandemic that's raging? Look, ultimately, that's about news judgment. It's about lack of judgment. But I find it befuddling that some people are acting like this death toll is just normal and accepted and common and just another day now. Imagine if 1 to 2,000 Americans were dying a day from terror attacks. Imagine the president's response.
One of his producers needs to tell him that there's 8 or 9,000 Americans dying every day. Pandemic, no pandemic. 55, 60,000 Americans per week. The highest we've had thus far, I think it's 69,000 a couple weeks ago, according to the CDC. 69,000 Americans died. This was during one of the peak weeks of coronavirus. And during one of the peak weeks from the 2017-18 flu, it was 67,000 Americans died. Where was Brian Stelter then? This is the new Mueller probe. You see how they're using it. The Mueller probe was designed to conceal the attempted coup, to keep the truth from being made known. And really what you just heard there from that CNN anchor, it's quite revealing. Evidently, there's not enough time in the 24-hour news cycle to cover the truth about a U.S. president attempting to entrap and frame his successor. There's no time for it. He's not there in that clip saying, you know what, you know, hey, we've talked about the pandemic for the last hour. Let me just give you the latest on the Mueller probe. There are some facts coming out now that would suggest that they tried to trap General Flynn. None of that. His basic beef with Fox News and conservative media is that they're even covering the story. You shouldn't even cover it. How can you even cover that story when there's a pandemic going on? It's like 9/11 every single day. That's what they want it to be. Because they don't want you looking at this story. They don't want you getting the truth. They want to continue on with their lies. They want to carefully frame everything. They want to frame the narrative. But now they're being exposed, and they're nervous. This it really reveals, doesn't it, these clips, these comments, these revelations, just how far-reaching, just how vast this conspiracy was. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with our Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert Armstrong often said it was more difficult to unlearn an erroneous supposed truth than it is to learn a new truth. Even after 58 years of faithfully serving God, he had not fully and clearly realized the significance of the fact revealed in Genesis 3, 22-24, that, in fact, God had closed the Holy Spirit and eternal life to mankind in general, until the removal of Satan at the second coming of Jesus Christ. Traditional Christian teaching has always assumed there is a contest between God and Satan, that God has been trying desperately to get the world saved. In other words, God had sent Jesus Christ at his first coming to try to win this ongoing war against Satan. Traditional Christianity has taught that whosoever will may come and be saved through Jesus. For many years, Mr. Armstrong partially realized the error of this assumption, but the full truth on this point did not come crystal clear to his mind until the last few years of his life. This truth, fully explained in Mystery of the Ages, is indeed mind-boggling. This book clears what has been fully clouded in mystery. It will open your eyes to the truth of these long hidden mysteries. This enlightening volume thoroughly explains precisely what the Bible says about the seven great mysteries of life. It is free upon request. For more, visit thetrumpet.com.
The month before my father wrote the Saving America article at the Trumpet, this is 2 years ago, but going back to the month before, April of 2018, he had the article in there about the Nunes memo, how it exposes this threat to America. My father said, what is wrong with our media? What's wrong with them? This is aberrant behavior, to say the least. What causes that? He said the way these people are being swayed and driven by their emotions is a strong sign of the devil's influence. My father says, as America under attack brings out, they were somewhat spellbound by this politician who did unprecedented damage to America. He's talking about Barack Obama. They were spellbound by him. They swooned, remember? They would swoon in his presence. They adored him. They still do. And they're still covering for him. Strategic leaks. Here comes one from Michael Isikoff over the weekend. Make sure Obama gets his voice out there. Never mind trying to get him in an actual interview where he has to answer for this injustice. It says they were deceived and it led them into some terrible, disturbing reasoning. They actually contributed to the deadly damage of America's constitutional republic. It says their actions are illogical and impossible to explain purely on a physical level. It's impossible to explain. You can't even explain it unless you know a little bit about Revelation 12 and verse 9 and John 8 and verse 44 and the father of lies. There is no truth in the devil. Nothing. He just keeps lying and lying and lying. What is this leading to? I gave you this quote last week from the Ezekiel booklet. It says, when you see the world, the way world events are unfolding, you know an explosion is about to happen. It's only a matter of when. My father says, we live in a time when the transgressors are come to the full. There has never been evil as there is today. It says, as the Bible prophesies, it will all culminate in nuclear World War III. He says, do you have the urgency that you need in these dangerous times? These are dangerous times that we're living in, 2 Timothy 3:1. Perilous times. And we've got to be urgent. And we've got to be prepared for what's coming, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. If you look at some of the prophecies in Ezekiel, chapter 4 and and 5, talk about the curses coming upon us in thirds, the internal strife and division that leads to mass killings, violence, rioting, and then the second third, and again, you'll have to study this on your own, but the second third is the attack from without, the attack brought on by the Holy Roman Empire. And then a third of our people going into captivity. God breaks it down into that detail in chapter 5. Let me just read a couple of verses from Ezekiel 5 to you. Verse 8, it says, therefore, thus says the eternal God, behold, I, even I, am against you. God is against us and will execute judgments in the midst of you, in the sight of the nations. And I will do in you that which I have not done, and whereunto I will not do any more the like because of all these abominations. There's not going to be anything like it in history. That's the same message as Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. It's the same message as Daniel 12 and verse 1. Nothing like it ever since there's been a nation, God says. This is what we've got to prepare our minds for. That which I have not done. That's what God's prepared to do. And then he goes on and breaks it down. Verse 12 says, a third part of you shall die with the pestilence, and with famine shall they be consumed in the midst of you, and a third part shall fall by the sword round about you. And I will scatter a third part into all the winds, and I will draw out a sword after them. That's Ezekiel 5 and verse 12. Further on in the book, over in Ezekiel 7 and verse 15, it says, the sword is without, and the pestilence and the famine within. He that is in the field shall die with the sword, and he that is in the city, famine and pestilence shall devour him. And so there's no escaping it, what's coming. You can't hole up somewhere in a remote location and think that, well, if it gets bad, at least I'll be off here to myself. God says we've got to be prepared. He says in the Ezekiel booklet, my father does, the seeds of this future calamity have already been sown. We're getting dangerously close to social anarchy and chaos. You see the two sides that are going to go against each other. You've got the one side that says, that other side, all they do is lie. And then the other side looks at the other side and says, that's all they do is lie. Who's telling the truth? How do you get to the truth? I should have brought the clip, but they asked this White House press secretary, this new gal that came in there, one of her first briefings. One of the reporters, if you can believe it, says, will you pledge to us that you'll never, never lie to us, that you'll always tell the truth? Can you believe this? These people that perpetuated these lies, that spread these lies, that spread the leaks. And then they had Obama people coming and lying to them, lying to their faces. And it didn't bother them at all because they agreed with their politics. But boy, they just can't stand it if the other side is in power, or certainly not if the other side lies. Now, that's too much. It's building to an explosion. The seeds of this future calamity have already been sown. What does your Bible say? I mentioned Revelation 12:9 and John 8:44. Galatians 1:4 says that this world is evil. God calls it the present evil world. It's not going to be this way in the world to come. You can read about that in Hebrews 2:5. You can read about it much more in the World Tomorrow booklet by Mr. Armstrong. Last week I touched on the subject of God's coming kingdom and how that every day, even in our prayer closet, if we're following the outline that Jesus gave to us, we're praying, "Thy kingdom come." That's the solution to all of this evil. We're praying for God's will to be done. God's will isn't being done on this earth today. Far from it. So much evil, so much corruption. My mother-in-law was mentioning to me yesterday just how that, even if you look at the history, now I don't think anything rises to the level of what Antiochus nearly got away with, but if you look at the history of the United States and just how what political leaders were willing to do to gain power, to hold on to power, it's brought out the worst in human nature, and it's not just a brand new thing that we're seeing in these last few years. It's just that, as Paul said, it's getting worse. Evil men and seducers are waxing worse and worse, as 2 Timothy says. All those scriptures, as I mentioned last week, that describe the return of Christ. Let me just finish with a few verses in Luke 21. It speaks here in this prophecy about great tribulation, or in verse 22, it says the days of vengeance. The language is a little different from gospel to gospel. But Luke says, "For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." And then verse 24 says, "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles, until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." And then you have all these heavenly signs, as verse 25 brings out. Signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity. The sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are come on the earth. It says, "For the powers of heaven shall be shaken." This is what we're about to witness. Unprecedented suffering. Men's hearts failing them for fear. But that's not where the story ends. That's not how that this ends. It says in verse 27, "And then," it says, "then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory." Here is that blessed event prophesied in hundreds of Bible passages. "Then shall the Son of Man come." And verse 28 says, "And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws near." Our redemption is drawing near. That's the real significance of these many prophecies we're seeing fulfilled. An Antiochus, a Jeroboam administration, the Jeroboam end, God making one final pass. And he says, in the midst of all this, there's a lot of negative news. He says, "Lift up your heads." This is from our correspondence course. It says, God knows our human nature, and he's warning us not to be discouraged, or not to get discouraged. He says, don't let this get you down. He's telling us, lift up your head, because your redemption draws near. Jesus Christ is about to return. The lesson says, don't lose your hope or your positive attitude. We're getting awfully close to the end. That's the battle we have. We must not look only at the bad news. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of bad news, for sure. But we can't look at that alone. We have to see the hope beyond. And that hope is in Jesus Christ and his return to this earth and the resurrection of the saints. As I read last week, this comes from Mystery of the Ages. How amazing, what a tragedy that in church services and gospel preaching today, one seldom, if ever, hears of Christ as the coming king and world ruler. It says, it is these earthly governments of Satan that will be destroyed and replaced by Christ at his second coming. Christ's kingdom is of the world tomorrow. The world today, it's evil. The world of tomorrow is the world of Jesus Christ's kingdom, God's kingdom on this earth, got the rule of God's family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.